Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew's in the studio with us. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, last week I had the pleasure of attending the 40th annual estate planning and fiduciary law conference. Over 300 attorneys in North Carolina. North Carolina Bar Association heads down to Key Island, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting there.
Yeah.
But it's a great place, and we really enjoy the conference and enjoy the scenery as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just had a great time to kind of catch up on everything regarding, you know, the kind of the latest and greatest in estate planning and fiduciary law. Good speakers, great topics. You know, it ranged from the Kastner decision that, mm-hmm. that Sam talked about last week on the program. Big talk on the Kastner
yeah.
trust decision
by the trust and
exactly.
who is responsible for the taxes on it and what state
exactly.
can collect them. Yeah.
So North Carolina says that we tax beneficiaries. So
mm-hmm.
if you have a trust that has a beneficiary who happens to be in North Carolina, they want to be able to tax your trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the facts in Kastner was basically that this beneficiary received no distributions. The trust had no other related contacts to the state of North Carolina other than this beneficiary. He just happened to live in the state of North Carolina. Supreme Court comes and says, that's not enough
yeah.
North Carolina to be able to tax. And the question is the legislature going to make a change? Are they going to make
right.
a legislative change and try to legislate around it? Or are they going to take this is a narrow, narrow decision. You know,
mm-hmm.
normally trusts are making distributions. Normally, you know, North Carolina's going to be able to get its fair share by having, you know, just keep this law in place and know that the casters
right.
of the world are very limited.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind
it's
of the way
like,
that
I
works.
It's not like, I mean, you know, one of the unusual taxation laws people hear about sometimes, like with pro athletes, if they play basketball and they play a game in a state, that state might end up taxing them.
Yes, correct.
Often does.
Exactly.
So, but it all depends on the state law. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, there's just so many different ways that trusts get taxed. And, you know, North Carolina's chosen this one, but the question is, what will they do? You know,
mm-hmm.
how will they respond to this? And that's kind of a question mark. And then how will this decision be applied? Most of the topics surrounding it were that it was probably going to be narrowly applied,
right.
which isn't too surprising.
Right.
I mean, the department will take a very narrow view of this case. So you got to have some pretty close facts in
mm-hmm.
order for your, you know, trust not to be taxed in North Carolina if you have a beneficiary living in North Carolina.
Okay.
So, you know, estate administration, just general stuff. We had a public administrator
mm-hmm.
who, you know, went through different cases that she's currently working on in various scenarios. And as you know, each of those scenarios is very, you know, very fact intensive
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you deal with the main job of an administrator is you collect the assets,
mm-hmm.
you know, you look at what the debts are in the estate, and then you try to pay as much of the debts as you can, and then you marshal the rest of the money to the beneficiaries. You know, it's just always interesting to hear the ones that you just can't believe. You know, you get a scenario where, you know, you're in the middle of one, you're working on selling some real property, and then boom, somebody else who owns a piece of the property dies,
yeah,
you know, and then you end
right.
up in a tailspin. So in that estate ends up taking 3, 4, 5 years, you know, to get settled. But I think the big takeaway from that is that, you know, you have to take each estate separately,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I tell my clients this a lot, and I say, you know, it doesn't matter whether you've got a $1 million estate or you've got a very small estate, the issues
mm-hmm.
are still the same with every estate that you run into, because, you know, you're going to need to see what the assets are. You're going to look to see who the creditors are. You're going to see what we need to do, and you go creditor by creditor, claim by claim, because each one has a different class, and then you decide how we're going to handle each one of those potential creditors. You know, and then again, we try to expeditiously administer the estate for the benefit of the beneficiaries as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you hit roadblocks, and a lot of times it does involve potentially, you know, we don't have enough money to pay the creditors. What are we going to do? Is someone going to come out of pocket? Are we going to try to sell a piece of real property? You know, those are questions that always get put on the table, but it really becomes a very, like I said, fact intensive situation with each and every estate that we deal
mm-hmm.
with.
Yes, because I know one of the kind of things that you deal with, I remember talking to an attorney who was trying to chase down some 43 beneficiaries
exactly.
out of the state, you know,
yeah.
and because it wasn't very well crafted in how the estate or the trust was put in place.
You better believe it. We deal with that all the time of, you know, unknown beneficiaries or beneficiaries that we haven't heard from in years, and there's a certain amount that you can pay over to the clerk of court in the event that you can't
mm-hmm.
find a beneficiary. So, there's different ways to handle it, but, you know, it's one of those situations where got to take it case by case and do the best you can with the facts and circumstances mm-hmm. and make sure you follow the law. And that's where I think having the attorney involved within the state administration is so critical.
Will you have in any discussion about different changes in the law?
Like so I'm glad you mentioned that because I think the biggest take home mm-hmm. that I took, and one of the things that surprised me the most when I was there, was that the talk about estate taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, we're at a environment where I did a show a couple weeks ago talking about how we're at a point right now where you want to keep things in your estate.
Right.
You know, because you want to get that step up in tax basis and you want to make sure that you eat away these built-in gains on these low basis, you know, stock, securities, real property, stuff
like
that. Because
very few people are going to reach that level.
Exactly. Very few people are going to reach the 10 in an index for inflation at $11.9 million, you know, $22 million for a couple. You know, very few people are going to reach those levels.
And no state. Right.
And no state estate tax here in North Carolina. So I was like sitting here going, wait a minute, why are we talking about this estate tax so much? And I think the key word here was flexibility. You know, and we've mentioned that a lot of times on this program about how we handle things at Harvell and Collins, which is, you know, we want to plan your estate for anything.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that we've got you covered under existing law, and we want to make sure that we built in, you know, the trust that are necessary or know the appropriate means to take that which may be necessary should the estate tax come down. And, you know, we know that the estate tax is sunsetting in 2025, but that's, you know, 6 years away. And we're not sure what's going to happen to it at that point, but we know that it is set to drop back down to the $5 million level.
It's on the federal.
On the federal. Yeah, that's correct. But, you know, I think one of the big things that's driving this talk and why we put so much emphasis on the estate tax at this particular conference was we have an election coming up, you know, and if you watch any of the debates or you hear anything, there's a lot of plans being proposed and somebody's got to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the popular mantra on one side of the aisle is let's continue to tax the quote unquote rich.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways that you can do that is through the estate tax.
Yes. And taking it from dead rich people doesn't sound nearly as bad as taking it from living ones.
Yeah, they can't really fight back as much.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So it's one of those situations where I think that might be a ripe apple if someone wants to try to take the mantle and go, no, this is what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're wanting to take it from you while you're living, i.e. Elizabeth Warren's plan of wealth tax.
Of wealth tax, yeah.
Then you know, they'll gladly take it from you when you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's just the reason that this was such a big push in this particular year's conference of saying, look, don't forget about this. We know right now it only affects a very, very small percentage of your clients. You know, you run across, you know, an estate that's taxable, you know, hardly ever. You know, in this particular area.
Yeah, well, we have, and since we've been doing this show, it's gone from $1 million to 11.5 million. And there was one year when it was the Steinbrenner year, it was zero.
Zero. That's correct.
So it's been a moving target for the past 20 years.
And so the way that you handle that, Ben, is that you know the law, number one, you know your options. So, you know, one of the options to do this is still allow what's called a disclaimer trust. So, you know, we have two spouses. One spouse is allowed to give everything to the other spouse, but in the event they want to disclaim any assets, it goes into what's called a credit shelter trust, which allows you to stack the credits on top of one another.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's a way to make sure that you get the double exemption amount. We keep mentioning couples
right.
of $22 million.
Right.
Well, that's correct from a theoretical standpoint, but you have to do something in order to claim that double credit.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you do that is either through a credit shelter trust, as I just mentioned, the disclaimer provision. We put those provisions in your documents just in case the level were to come down. Or, you know, number two is that there's what's called portability in the estate tax world right now, which says that upon the first spouse's death, we can file an estate tax return, even though one's not required because we know the estate is not taxable.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we check a box on that provision that says we want to port the unused exemption amount over to the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that works is that you file this return. Now, keep in mind, it's got to be all the particularities of an estate tax return that would be a taxable return have to be met to file this return. Appraisals of real property,
mm-hmm.
you know, appraisals of tangible property. you know, date of death values on all the stocks, bonds, IRAs, life insurance, everything that we can think of that you had your hands on at your death has got to come into this equation. So it is it's a very intense return that you do, even though we all know you're not paying any tax on it. But the goal there is not to, the goal there is to be as accurate as possible in order for us to be able to check the box that says we want this. You can't just check the box and send it in. You got to go through the rigmarole of, of, you know, putting down all the information, but your main goal there is to check that box. And all of a sudden through portability, you have an, you have a way to shield, you know, the surviving spouse. You now have a $22 million exemption. And oh, by the way, this is the rule. The Congress, the Treasury just passed regulations on this. Let's say we do that for a spouse that died this year and we port that $11 million over to the new spouse and the exemption goes down later when that surviving spouse dies. They've still got that $11 million kicker.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Remember, there's no clawback. That was one of the big rules that, that Congress passed through regulation saying we're not going to try to claw back this exemption amount. So if that person dies, they get $11 million exemption. That $11 million ports over to the surviving spouse and it is saved. So that is a big, big decision that recently came out in the regulations. And one thing that our listeners should be made aware of, if you're worried about estate taxes and maybe your spouse has recently passed or within this 9-month period, you know, think about giving me a call, shoot me an email. Let's talk about this portability issue because it might be worth your while as a just in case, a big insurance policy. Get that estate tax return filed. Check that box for portability and get that $11 million exemption.
Yeah, and get, before somebody else comes into power, it goes to zero. And no exemption, though. No. We'll have more to come in a moment here on a Coastal Daybreak. But thanks for joining us here for Life and Taxes. And as always, if you want to give them a call or email, that's a great way. Get in touch with Andrew, AFoster@HarvellandCollins.com.